WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Gay, feminist, religious, and parents groups have all tried to influence the content of entertainment programming on network television. Catherine Montgomery, in her new book, Target Prime Time, explores the impact of such advocacy groups on primetime television. Just a couple of weeks ago, the protest of a Michigan woman against adult material on the show Married with Children made front page news. Her protest took the form of a letter-writing campaign to the show's sponsors. Several sponsors canceled commercials, and Coca-Cola said they would review their method for evaluating which programs they air their commercials on. Montgomery says the deregulation climate of the 80s may have contributed to the network's own relaxation of some of their monitoring procedures. Standards and practices departments have been cut. Some of the pressure groups on the left and the right that made inroads during the 70s found themselves shut out in the 80s. But to get an idea of the larger picture, Montgomery says it's important to examine the advocacy groups that early on figured out how television operated and how to keep the pressure on.
One of the more successful groups, at least for the period of time in the middle to late 70s, were the gay activists, who, after a few difficult efforts to try to get the attention of network television over some TV programs like Marcus Welby, which linked gays with child molestation, actually set up an operation where they talked to network people on a regular basis and insisted on being consulted on the portrayal of gays. And it's quite an interesting story.
Can you give us a shorthand version of how they did it? Most people think of gay groups as being disenfranchised, and to be able to influence the television networks, well, that really takes clout.
Well, it does. First of all, it takes understanding the business, and some of the people who were involved in it knew a little bit about the industry to begin with. They'd worked in affiliated, one had worked for Variety, and others had knew people within the industry and understood a little bit about it. But then they set out to understand it very well. They also took advantage of the fact that there were a number of gay people working within the television industry who may or may not have been known to be gay, and were able to use those people to give them inside information about what was going on with particular programs.
Have the tactics been different for instance, gay groups and feminist groups than they've been for, say, moral majority type groups?
Absolutely.
What's the difference?
Well, first of all, gay groups, black groups, women's groups have been interested in the portrayals of their own constituencies, of particular segments of the population. And therefore, they have a more limited set of concerns in a way. I mean, for example, the gay activists were concerned about the way they were portrayed in certain programs, but they weren't looking across the board at all programming. The moral majority has taken a much broader look at programming and has, in fact, I think, had a much larger agenda in terms of trying to change the value system in television and make it much more conservative and conventional than it had been. They certainly reacted in the late 70s and early 1980s to the changes in social mores as they were being reflected in television and saw television as an important battleground to try to change all of these things, that is, to impose a moral code on the programming. And because of that, their tactics were not the kinds of targeted tactics to talk to producers and writers or network people on a regular basis about the way certain issues were treated. What they did instead was to launch a campaign to target advertisers.
What do you think groups from the religious right have targeted sponsors instead of working behind the scenes with the networks?
Well, first of all, I know that what I see is that they can see that what they want television to do, that is to, across the board, not deal with sexual issues, to change the morals and so forth, it's not necessarily, the industry's not necessarily going to be very receptive to. If you compare them, for example, to gays or women who might be able to approach the networks and say, look, here's what we're concerned with. We don't think the images have been very positive. We have some very concrete suggestions for how you might change them. That's something that's negotiable. That's something that can be worked out, and there will be struggles over it, and there have been, as I've described in my book. But In the case of the religious right, there's such a much broader agenda that I think the leaders know network television is not going to be very receptive to them, and perhaps rightly so, because they want to, in a way, act as censors to all of the programming. But they do know, however, that advertisers are a kind of vulnerable pressure point, because advertisers are very sensitive to people's reaction to them, and they're very concerned about losing money.
You compare two different case studies in your book. This is a very interesting comparison between how an episode of Maud was handled in 1972, an episode in which Maud gets an abortion, and an episode in 1985 of Cagney and Lacey, in which they have to confront anti-abortion picketers at a clinic. What's the most telling thing in the comparison between these two shows and what controversy meant to the networks?
Maud was broadcast, those episodes were broadcast in the fall of 1972 during a season when there was an upsurge in controversial programming, which had begun with All in the Family. And the program actually had Maud get pregnant at the age of 47 and have an abortion. There was a clear discussion of abortion, and it was talked about quite openly. In fact, Maud's daughter referred to it as being as easy as going to the dentist. There was a huge protest from the Catholic Church, who felt it was inappropriate for Maud to be talking about something like that during prime time and during a comedy program, and who felt it was one-sided. It was a really very troubling incident for network television, and one of those incidents that had an impact, a lasting impact. Abortion wasn't even dealt with for a number of years because it was such a touchy subject and because it had elicited such a huge outcry. What happened and what began to happen over time, however, is that because the networks wanted controversial material in their programs in order to draw audiences, they had to find ways to present that material that would deflect criticism in a kind of preemptive way, that is, that would keep these kinds of disruptive protests from happening, which had resulted in all the sponsors withdrawing from the Maud episode the second time it was shown, and a number of affiliates from not carrying the show. So by the time you get to 1985 with a show like Cagney and Lacey, which decides to deal with the abortion issue, there are policies in place. And the one that's most important here is the policy of balance. And I'm sure everybody knows it when they see it, because it permeates entertainment television programming. And so when the Cagney and Lacey episode was run, there was a very, very careful attempt made to make sure that the arguments in opposition to choice were articulated and done so very, very carefully within the program. And so written into the show was a pro-life activist who was purposefully presented as a very positive, articulate person and who could articulate this position effectively. And that was the way of creating balance. Now, the show did elicit some protests, but part of those protests were actually sort of stirred up by the producer who wanted more visibility for the show. And often these protests do help draw more attention to the program.
Do you feel reassured that there are advocacy groups who are pressuring the networks to change the content of their programming, to change the way people are represented in programs? Does this inspire confidence on your part? Or
does it inspire confidence in whom?
Well, in you as a viewer. In you as a viewer. I mean, are you glad that there are a lot of
advocacy groups? In a way, yes, I am. I mean, I think that the viewers need to be active and need to be involved in television. Television is a very powerful and pervasive medium. It has a presence in people's lives that is unprecedented. And it's understandable why organizations see programming as something to be involved with, and why they would react, and why they would do something about things the way things are presented. So I'm glad that viewers are active. I wouldn't expect these organizations, these organized viewers, to be totally passive. And I think in a way it works as a kind of feedback, as the networks referred to it at one point, for the networks. That is, they know how people and groups are reacting. They also learn. The other thing is, groups have worked as consultants and have actually negotiated with the networks and given them information and helped them know better how to portray a given group of people or how to deal with a certain issue. And that I think that's good.
Catherine, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.